Well, hi folks, I'm Richard Searle, and welcome to week 8 of our podcast course on mindfulness, meditation and reflection for leaders and managers. In this session, we're going to be focusing on how mindfulness, meditation, reflection can help us promote creativity and innovation in our leadership. And even broader than that, problem solving and high performance. So we're really interested in this notion of how mindfulness can help us both at an individual level or a collective level to be more generative. And what I mean by generative is being the source of impacting or influencing things to happen. And that's what we're going to explore a bit today. But before we do, let's just do a few breathing exercises just to help us be present and relax for the podcast. Let go of work, let go of other things happening in your life. Take a few deep breaths in, watching the air coming through your nostrils, down through your lungs, down to the diaphragm, slowly letting it out, watching the air come out through your nostrils. Just some deep breaths in, deep breaths out, relaxing you, calming you. Just use your breath to relax yourself and let go. Watching your breathing. Okay, very good. So in the second half of this podcast, we will do a meditation together, and then we will do an extension of that meditation practice where we'll do a particular exercise from Ian Gawler, which is about cultivating creativity and problem-solving skills around some specific challenge or issue that you're dealing with. But before we get there, I'd like to look at a few ideas around creativity and innovation and being generative and how mindfulness can contribute to this. And the exercise we're going to do later is contained in the book by Ian Gawler and by Paul Bedson called Meditation, An In-Depth Guide. And one of the quotations at the beginning of that from a range of well-known people, one of them is from John Bertrand, who was the skipper who won the America's Cup for Australia after I think America held it for 119 years or something continuously. It was a joyous day for many Australians. And he has a quote there saying, "The power of the mind is untapped. We know that within the world of the Olympic Games, in our endeavours to go further, higher and faster, we discover new ways to unleash ourselves through the power of the mind. And we're only at the beginning of that." Ian Gawler and Paul Bedson, he goes on to say, bring a fascinating insight through the powers of meditation to that pursuit. And it reminded me that Ian himself has done, has worked with a range of elite sports people and Olympic champions. And part of what we're exploring today is this work about tapping into the power of the mind. It's very interesting when you look at issues around pain management. So back in 1956, not long after the Second World War, a famous study was made, and it was documented in what was then the Journal of the American Medical Association. And it was a study comparing World War II veterans and civilians who were dealing with exactly the same injury or illness at the time, and how much they relied on narcotic painkillers to assist them with their pain management. And what the study found was that the civilians requested narcotic painkillers 83% of the time, whereas the veterans, the World War II veterans, with exactly the same injury, requested it only 32% of the time. Now, this is a large difference, and there have been various interpretations, etc., about what that meant. But what is certainly most stark is that somehow the veterans experienced pain less, or could regulate pain better, or could deal with pain better than the civilians could. Some people speculate because they were more used to dealing with it, others that they now felt safe out of a war zone. All sorts of theories have come to light about managing pain. And it reminds me of the work of the neuroscientist V.S. Ramachandran, who's written a whole range of books, most famous initially about his work around phantom limbs and the fact that that people who lose limbs still experience all the pain associated with the limbs sometimes, and you have to do a lot of work to help them manage the pain. They've still got the pain, but they haven't got the limb. And he's well known for a particular quote. I don't know if he said it or if it's the critics of his, but it's a quote, is that pain is an opinion. Now, he's not saying pain's not real or it's not severe, and I'm certainly not saying that. As somebody who's suffered from a dodgy, irritating back for 20 years after running marathons in my previous life, and someone who's been a chronic severe asthmatic for 50 years, I'm not in any sense belittling the existence of pain, and nor is he. But he's pointing out a very interesting fact, which is that we often have a naive mechanistic view that there are certain nerve points somewhere in the body that are pain nerve points, and they send a message to the brain saying there's pain happening here. But a lot of neuroscientists argue there are no such pain nerves, that it's the brain, our mind, that interprets pain. And what's known is that sometimes the degree of pain is not actually, that people are experiencing and reporting, is not a reliable indicator of the severity of the injury. So lots of studies, for instance, show that experiencing fear or catastrophizing about pain can embellish the experience of pain, exaggerate it. Having expectations, because you're in such chronic, regular pain, having expectations of pain can contribute to the strength of the pain that we feel. And it raises a really interesting point, that if there are things in the mind, such as fear, that can make pain worse, then are there other things in the mind, other thoughts, other images in the brain that might help us to make pain better? So, for instance, Matthew Ricard records meeting with Francis Varela, a scientist and a lifelong meditator, very shortly before he died from a rather long and theoretically very painful cancer. And he was quite shocked to see how lucid he was. And Francis Varela shared with him that he hadn't been using any morphine or any pain reduction drugs, that he had found that his meditation practice had been enough to help him regulate the pain. So research has shown other ways that we can regulate pain a little better if we feel safer, without as much fear, can help us lower the experience of pain. If we can influence our expectations so that we're not so expectant of pain and more relaxed, that can lower the experience of pain. If we think about someone we love, that can lower the experience of pain sometimes. Even holding hands with your partner can lower people's reported experience of pain. So this is the power of the mind in relationship to something as serious, if you like, as pain. And in a sense, what we're interested in this podcast is how do we tap into this power of the mind to help us to be more generative, to help us to be more creative and innovative in our leadership. Well, here are three ideas that are worth exploring. So one of them is to develop our curiosity. So Walter Isaacson has written quite a lot of books around innovation. He's done a whole range of biographies of great innovators: Steve Jobs, Einstein, Benjamin Franklin, Leonardo da Vinci. And the one that he's written about Leonardo da Vinci is quite fascinating. So Leonardo da Vinci has often been described as the most relentlessly curious man ever. And one of the features of Leonardo da Vinci is that he was extremely eclectic, that he was interested in not just art, but engineering, science, anatomy, you name it, he was interested in it. But he also had extraordinary focus. So although he unfortunately had a habit of not finishing a lot of his artistic works, he still did finish a few masterpieces there. One of his masterpieces is known as the Mona Lisa. But of course, he knew he was onto something with the Mona Lisa. He wouldn't give it back to the merchant who'd actually paid for it. And he kept it with him for however long, 20, 30 years, and kept adding to it. And people talk about, oh, it's amazing how the eyes follow you, and that lips that have this inexplicable smile. None of that is an accident with Leonardo da Vinci, because he studied with extraordinary focus how the eyes worked, how the light worked, how reflection worked. He studied all the muscles in the mouth and the lips to understand how lips worked. So this genius had both extraordinary focus and extraordinarily wide attention, curiosity. And of course, this is exactly what we attempt to cultivate through the practice of mindfulness. And one of the propositions in mindfulness practice is to constantly bring a beginner's mind to your endeavors so that you are open and focused without all this baggage. So the whole practice of curiosity is one of the practices. And then you combine it with all those innovation methods, design thinking, you know, customer needs, pivoting and pitching, etc., plus all the work around innovative teamwork to enable creativity and innovation to be applied within your own business or organization. A second idea is the one that comes from positive thinking and positive psychology. And really, this is the idea, Martin Seligman would argue, that we have, a lot of us, particular explanatory styles, which he calls the pessimistic explanatory style, which over time tends to take setbacks and disappointments very personally, to see them as permanent and all-pervasive, the three P's. And this then gets in the way of us actually accomplishing more, being more optimistic, being more generative in our work and our leadership. Now, in positive psychology, they have various remedies for that. In particular, is this focus around signature or character strengths. I have my own version of the counter cycle to the three P's, and I call them the peace of mind P, where we take on new commitments and attempts to change habits and create new useful habits with a peace of mind. So we're not carrying lots of baggage. It's not trying to solve some agenda we've got. It's not based in our pretty paltry ego. It's based out of peace of mind and non-attachment. The second P that I have in my more virtuous cycle to counter the pessimistic cycle is persistence. That pretty much nothing worthwhile gets done without persistence. And my third one, my third P, is patience. That you need to be able to deal with setbacks and lack of progress and everything else. And if you're a quitter and you give up at the first hurdle, you don't have the resilience and the patience to handle all those challenges, then you'll never get through the more positive cycle of dealing with challenges or with goals. The third method that's worth considering, and this is one that's used a lot by elite sports people, but it's not that regularly used by managers and leaders, and that is to use visualization, imagery, even affirmation as a way of being more creative, but more generative, but also more high-performing. So in the arts, in the elite sports, it's not uncommon for elite sports people to visualize how they're going to perform the event, how they're going to succeed at the end of it. It's not unusual for them to use imagery of them touching the end of the pool, standing on the dais with the prize. It's not unusual for them to use all sorts of affirmations about every day I'm getting stronger and stronger, etc. Now, sometimes these methods can seem a bit dinky and magic thinking for managers and leaders. But you have to ask yourself the question that if elite performers consider them useful, then why aren't managers and leaders tapping into this method of improving our performance and our creativity? Okay, let's take a break from all that. I know I've got you thinking about lots of things at the moment, but let's take a break, let all that go, and let's do a meditation together. So sit up straight if you wouldn't mind. Relax, close your eyes if you're willing to. Take some deep breaths, breathing in deeply, breathing out deeply, watching your breath, letting go everything else, just relaxing now. Some deep, natural peace from watching your breathing. And now your eyes are shut. Notice the darkness in front of your eyes. Fall into the darkness. Rest in the darkness. Notice the darkness in front of your eyes. And now notice the sounds around you at your place at the moment. You don't need to label things necessarily, but notice any sounds, including sounds that might be happening in your own body. And I'll stop talking for a moment and just notice sounds. Okay, great. And if your mind's already run off and you're back with the old topic or some new topic or some new goal, that's all fine. But remember, part of our practice is building the muscle to be able to bring our attention back to what we choose to put our attention on. It's not to beat ourselves up for having our attention on something else, but it's to build the capacity to bring it back. So now I'd like you to bring your attention to your feet and notice how your feet feel at the moment. Any sensations in your feet, rubbing the floor, rubbing your socks, warm, cold, anything that's going on down there. And now bring your attention to your stomach. Feel into your stomach. Notice your stomach. Anything going on, sore muscles, tight, loose, anything at all in your muscle. In your stomach. And now bring your attention up to your shoulders and your neck and run your attention along your shoulders and up your neck, noticing how they feel at the moment. And see if by just giving some attention to them, you can relax them a little bit. Just notice what's happening there at the moment. And now bring your attention to your face, to your jaw, maybe move your tongue around. We hold our jaw rigid often. Feel into your eyes, your eye sockets, your eyelids. They can be quite stressful in there. Then into your brow. Notice what's going on there. And then just run your attention right down the front of your body, right down the back of your body. And now bring your attention back to your breathing. You are breathing. I don't want you to change that. I don't want you to do deep breathing, shallow breathing. I just want you to do whatever you are breathing. And all I want you to do is watch it. Watch the air comes in through your nostrils. Watch the air goes out through your nostrils. See if you can relax with it, maybe even enjoy watching it. Deep, natural peace. And if you wander off, bring your attention back when you can, and I'll stop talking. Okay, very good. Now come back from your breath. So now I want you to add this final step. I want you to notice that you have been observing or watching those things, including your breathing. And now what I want you to do is watch the observing. Observe the observing. Bring your awareness to awareness and rest in awareness. And if you start to wander, go back into your body, sounds, your breathing, and then bring your attention back to observing, to the awareness. And I'll stop talking for a while. Okay, very good. So come back now, come back into the room. So that meditation, or perhaps an extended version of it, is part of a method that Angola suggests you can use if you have a specific challenge, problem, or need for creativity, an issue that you're dealing with. And you're not sure what, how to handle it, what the next step is, what you should do. Maybe it's, you know, where do I take the business now after the pandemic? Do I stay in the same job after the pandemic? Whatever. You know, what will be our marketing campaign now after the pandemic? It doesn't have to have anything to do with the pandemic, but whatever. But if you have a particular problem that you're trying to solve or a creative challenge, he recommends you do all your research on it, all the background work on it, etc. And then set aside your research and engage in the kind of meditation that we just did then. But during the quiet part of the meditation, either when you're observing the breathing or resting in awareness, drop a question in. A bit like you would cast a fishing line in, and the question could be, well, should I stay in my job now or leave my job? Or how will I now handle market demand for my business after the pandemic? Whatever the issue is, I'm making it up. Throw the question in and then return to the meditation. Notice any feelings and sensations that arise in relationship to the question. But just notice them. And you can, at various intervals, repeat the question. Now you have to allow time for it to sink in. And you may then find relevant thoughts, memories, symbols, or associations coming to mind. If there's too much of that, then you've probably strayed off back into thinking. And the thinking's not going to help you because you've done all the thinking. You're now wanting to go beyond the thinking and be creative and generative. So return to the meditation. And you may or may not notice that responses start to come to you. Some new ideas occur to you, some new insights arise for you. They may not be earth-shattering, or they might be very, very novel. And When you're satisfied with the process, complete the meditation. Take whatever notes you need to. Now, I find I use this practice quite regularly when I'm dealing with problems or dealing with challenges, or I need a breakthrough in some arena, some specific arena, not a general arena. And I don't come up with E equals MC squared. Yep. Anyway, someone else has already found that. But what I notice is two kinds of things often occur for me. One is that I associate two ideas that have already been in my mind, but I haven't associated them before, that give me new insight into how to handle the issue. Or the other thing that regularly occurs is I get the next best step. And often that's really all you need. What is the next best step? And that is what occurs to me using this process. So for instance, running this podcast course is an example of the next best step. At the start of the pandemic, because I'm a chronic asthmatic, I self-isolated. Most of my clients postponed their work. And I had this question, what can I usefully do for the people who are my subscribers and followers to make a contribution? And to be honest, initially I thought, nothing. And I used this method and the idea came to me. Make a podcast course around mindfulness, meditation and reflection for leaders. Now, when I had that idea, I thought, that's a good idea. I might get 10 people who want to do that, and I'm willing to do that. I got hundreds of people who wanted to do it. It turned out it touched a nerve. And I think this, for me, illustrates part of this, that this method kind of helps you get in touch with what may actually be rather common sense, except your thinking is blocking the common sense. Anyway, that's a method you can use with specific creative challenges or problems that you want to deal with in your leadership. So we need to bring this podcast to an end. Next week, we're going to be looking at how we can use mindfulness, meditation, reflection to promote more kindness towards ourselves and towards others, and how we can use it to help us to become more of a force for good in our leadership. And the homework for this week, I really recommend that you do some more of that meditation practice, 1 minute, 10 minutes, whatever you can handle. Don't make it a struggle. But also remember that nothing much comes unless you're persistent and disciplined. And perhaps have a go at one of those methods or that exercise from Angola about being creative and problem solving. And good luck.